What is right and what is wrong? You see a friend at work doing something wrong. Do you report them? Yes or no? You see someone being bullied. Do you intervene or stay out of it? Yes or no? A family member wants to borrow money from you, but you know they won't be able to pay you back. Do you still lend them the money? Yes or no? What is right and what is wrong? It can sometimes be hard to know, and even harder to do what we think is right. Let me set the scene for John 13. The Passover festival is coming, looming over everyone. Jesus has made the decision to enter the city of Jerusalem, even though he knows it is dangerous and there are plots to have him arrested. He has this sense that he will die, and even that it is necessary for him to die. He gathers his closest friends, his disciples, those who have spent the last few years doing life with him, learning from him. They eat together. This will end up being Jesus' last meal. We are told in John's Gospel that Jesus wants to show them the full extent of his love. So he gets up sometime during the meal and he strips off his outer clothing, wraps a towel around his waist, puts water into a basin, and begins to wash his disciples' feet. There's so much that is wrong here. Foot washing normally takes place before you start eating, not during the meal. But Jesus gets up and begins to undress himself. When he removes his outer garment, his body is exposed, skin bare, just a loincloth on. He's physically transformed from an honorable male to a slave. That feels wrong, degrading. You don't cross social barriers like this. You don't descend, especially not if you're a man. We kind of saw something like this last week when Mary poured perfume onto Jesus' feet and washed it off with her hair. That was uncomfortable. Her love and devotion so intense that people wanted to look away, but this is worse. This is a man, a religious teacher, maybe a prophet, maybe a king, maybe God, looking first like a slave and then acting like one. Slaves are responsible for washing feet. It's a dirty job, literally washing off not just dirt, but potentially human and animal waste. It's demeaning, a job for a nobody, like a slave. Peter sees what Jesus is doing and is horrified. This is so wrong. Please stop. You shall never wash my feet, he declares. But Jesus argues, no, this is right. So right, in fact, that if you don't let me do this for you, you will have no part, no relationship, no share in me. Let me love you in this way. So Peter does. Jesus touches him and cleans his feet. Peter then gets carried away and says, don't stop there, wash all of me. But Jesus says, this is enough. Do you understand what I have done? I, the one you call teacher, Lord, have done this. You should also wash one another's feet. Jesus transgresses social norms here. Each disciple feels it, like physically, feels Jesus' hands on their feet. He is touching their skin, washing them clean. He does this first before giving an explanation, and I think this is really important. They actually experience his love for them with their bodies. It's real and undeniable. And then there is the head knowledge as he tells his disciples to do the same. There's a lot to unpack and we'll come back to it later. But for now, here's some questions to begin to throw around on your tables. What most shocks you? The undressing? The washing of the feet? The teaching that we should do likewise? Have you ever experienced something you thought was wrong or need to change your mind? Maybe a social norm that you've crossed? What do you think this action is saying to us about the love of God? And how do you learn? Do you learn through your body or do you learn through your head? What comes first? Head knowledge, body knowledge? It's a whole range of questions there. Maybe just choose one that catches your eye and spend some time discussing in our groups, and then we'll come back. What is right and what is wrong? One of the disciples, Judas, is eating and getting his feet washed. But Judas, says John, has already been prompted by the devil to betray Jesus. Judas comes across wrong right from the start. He's always known as the betrayer. Although, yeah, you might forget, but when Jesus' teaching started to get harder, many people dropped away. Earlier in this gospel, many disciples found what Jesus was saying was too hard and turned their backs on him. But Judas stayed. Although even there's talk by Jesus that one of the remaining disciples is a devil. The next time Judas appears in this gospel, he is offended by Mary pouring perfume on Jesus. It seems wrong to him and he objects, but then is rebuked by Jesus. John also adds that Judas is responsible for the money but is a thief, helping himself whenever he wants. And now he is sitting at this meal with plans in his head to betray Jesus. And Jesus seems to know that Judas will betray him. One moment he seems pretty calm about this fact, saying, well, this is to fulfill the words of Scripture. And the next moment Jesus is troubled, saying, one of you will betray me. And the disciples are also troubled, and one asks him privately, like, who are you talking about? Jesus dips bread into a bowl and hands it to Judas, signaling to this disciple that this is the one he is talking about. John 13, verse 27. After he'd received the piece of bread, Satan entered into him. Jesus said to him, do quickly what you are going to do. Now, no one at the table knew why he said this to him. Some thought that because Judas had the common purse, Jesus was telling him, buy what we need for the festival, or that he should give something to the poor. So after receiving the piece of bread, he immediately went out, and it was night. Judas comes across as a complete villain, clearly doing what is wrong. There is Satan at work in him. There he is, leaving the light of the room and heading out into the darkness. So what do you think? These are the big questions to discuss about Judas. Why? Why did Judas do this? Did he have a choice? Like, what's with Satan here? And is there anything redemptive about Judas? What do you think? Let me give you a moment to have a chat on your tables with one another. What is right and what is wrong? I always get the sense that Judas, somewhere along the way, starts to disagree with Jesus, thinking that Jesus is heading in the wrong direction. I wouldn't be surprised if Judas believed he was doing the right thing. Jesus isn't the person Judas thought he would be. Look at him, riding on a donkey, letting Mary waste that perfume on him, and now acting like a slave. It's all so weak and pathetic. Judas doesn't want to follow such a person, especially when the authorities are breathing down their necks, and so he saves his own skin. He makes sure he won't be caught up in Jesus' downfall. Maybe he even thinks he's saving Jesus. Some have speculated that maybe Judas just thought he was organizing a meeting between Jesus and the religious leaders, like get him arrested. But maybe he didn't really think that Jesus would die. Either way, this life is not what Judas signed up for. So he saves himself. Is that wrong? The book of Job begins with this curious discussion between God and Satan. They're looking at Job, a man who trusts and loves God. But Satan says, oh, Job, he only loves and trusts you because you make his life so good. Job 2 verse 4, Satan answered the Lord, skin for skin. All that people have they will give to save their lives. But stretch out your hand now and touch his bone and his flesh, and he'll curse you to your face. Satan is known as the accuser and has seen the worst in people. Like people, they're just selfish, only caring for themselves, only wanting God in their lives if God can give them what they want. We only care about our own self-preservation. Is it right or wrong to save your life? In many ways, self-preservation makes a lot of sense. It's natural, important. We need to care for ourselves in order to care for others. We want to live, and so we do things to keep us safe, and that's a good thing. Boundaries are a good thing. But there is a line I think we can cross. When we put ourselves first at the expense of others, which can become problematic. And depending on what we're talking about, it actually, we might even use stronger language. We might call it wrong or evil. You know, when some save their lives at the expense of others, it can be troubling. Or when some cover up their actions, like corruption in governments or companies or churches, lying to save their own skin, escaping the consequences of their actions, it feels wrong. I think one of the wonderful things about love is learning to think about someone other than ourselves. Interestingly, God doesn't judge Job in quite the same way as Satan. Like, you know, God sees our worst, of course. But God always loves, always persists, always believes that people can be more than just self-centered individuals or communities, that people can love. In John 13, when Judas leaves, Jesus talks to those who remain in the room. And he once again says God is going to be glorified and that he's only going to be here for a little longer. And then he says this, verse 34, I give you a new commandment, that you love one another. Just as I have loved you, you also should love one another. By this everyone will know you are my disciples if you have love for one another. Loving others seems like the right action to take, doesn't it? Jesus calls people to love. But not any old love, actually to love as he is loved. So the disciples have to think, well, what does that mean? How have we seen Jesus love? Well, we've seen Jesus serve so many people. The guests at the wedding, the man in need of healing, the crowds that were hungry, and now this last act, washing their feet. Jesus does not save his own skin. This is a rare form of love. He cares about others, even if it looks pathetic. Even if he's not thanked or he gets nothing in return. Indeed, he loves Judas. Eating, breaking bread with him, knowing his friend is going to lift his heel against him. Practicing love in the way of Jesus means being up close with people. So close you can touch. It's not a distant, abstract love that Jesus is talking about here. We can undervalue touch. It's a sense that people in the West regularly list as least important to them. That's why slaves in the ancient world did the work of touch. It was considered shameful, gross. And we can still have that recoil. You know, those who work with people, caring for their physical needs, we underpay because it's not something that we tend to value. And yet if a baby is never touched, never hugged, they wither and die. Touch can be abused, but it is meant to be one of the first ways that we experience love, experience God's love, because it's something we experience in and with our bodies. And when that's done, when there's done in safety, when there's consent, skin-to-skin contact is so powerful. It reminds us we are loved by someone outside of ourselves, and it reminds us to begin to look outside of ourselves to love in return. Practicing love in the way of Jesus might mean being prepared to let go of our ego a little bit, our own prestige and power. Jesus humbles himself. I mean, in some ways, this is what still shocks people. When Christians talk about Jesus being the Son of God, that people say, why would God become one of us? To become limited to one body, to become weak, it's such a debasement. It seems wrong. And not only do Christians speak about God becoming one of us human, but Jesus isn't a particularly rich or powerful human being. He keeps identifying with the weak. It goes against our natural instincts, which is, you know, save our own skins, get ahead in life. But Jesus lets that all go. He makes himself vulnerable. And again, that can open us up potentially to abuse. But in the right context, as you see Jesus washing the disciples' feet and feel that skin-to-skin contact, we begin to see that when God talks about love, it's a love that is humble and inclusive. And it challenges us to think, well, what would it mean for us to be a people who are humble and inclusive? Practicing love in the way of Jesus might cost us. It might hurt at times. Jesus welcomes and shares a meal with Judas, knowing he's going to betray him. That must hurt. Jesus welcomes and shares a meal with Peter, knowing that similarly, Peter is going to deny him 3 times that very night. Peter, like Judas, has this instinct to save his own skin. He'll be scared and he's going to lie. Jesus knows this and yet loves them both. He loves those who hate him. In that skin-to-skin contact, there is a hint of what Jesus will do. Loving sacrificially, giving up his own life for others. So, again, some big questions for you to chew on. How do we practice and learn to love in the way of Jesus as a community? What do you think? Is it cowardly or good sense to save your skin, or is it somewhere in between? How do we safeguard this type of love that Jesus is talking about from abuse? Why is the church not always known for its love? I'm not sure if people would say when they think Christians, oh yeah, we know them by the way they love. But why is it that we're not known for that? Again, all really big questions. Maybe just pick one and have some time chatting amongst yourselves. I want us to end today by praying for one another that we'd know what the right action to take is, praying that we would know God's love, praying that the Holy Spirit would teach us to love like Jesus. And if everyone's comfortable and there's no pressure to do this, but since we've been talking a lot about touch, it might be nice actually, it's not too weird, to actually hold hands around the table as an act of reaching out to one another in love and pray that way. Let's spend some time bringing what we've discussed and what we've heard to God and asking God to teach us how to love.